Hello and welcome to another episode of Shipping and Handling. I'm your host, Jennifer Udden.
And I'm your co-host, Bridget Smith.
So it's been a minute.
Yeah, just a bit.
Just a few minutes. It's been many, many moons since we last recorded. And in a point of fact, we have not even posted the episode that we recorded last. So accordingly, our traditional New Year's goal setting episode is going to be about reasonable goal setting and managing expectations. Yes. But first, Bridget, do you want to pop the bubbly?
This is a gift from my client, Amanda Soleil, whose debut by the book comes out from Houghton Mifflin Harcourt in May. And it is extremely delightful and funny and charming. And if you like YA romantic comedies or contemporary with humor or classic literature and hijinks thereof, I highly recommend it.
Hijinks. Love it. All right. Whee! We sort of have the trouble of not... Oh my God, it's pink! Yes! Because we have so much to kind of catch up on, it's like hard to know where to start. But how were your holidays?
They were pretty good. I had a lot of family stuff, which is always nice. Considering I like my family, so
that's
family
good. Stuff yeah.
is good. How were yours?
Good. Cheers! Think mine were good. Also family stuff. One of my aunts just had surgery for breast cancer, but apparently it is the kind that if you have to pick one, it's not the bad one to have, and she's doing really well, so that's she's good. Recovering well. Went to Houston. I read about 9 Agatha Christies in the space of 10 days, which felt perfect.
Nice. Yep.
Saw Little Women with my family, saw Knives Out with my family. It was a pretty good holiday.
Nice.
And then I saw Little Women with you.
Yes.
Of course.
Yes, that was fun.
It was really fun.
It was a very enjoyable movie.
Filled with sartorial moments.
Oh my gosh.
Were it not the 21st century,
we would absolutely be copying.
Yes.
I so admired all of the waistcoats, but also do not think, I think that a waistcoat in the modern day is a totally different vibe that is significantly less cool.
It's very waiter on a cruise ship or I never got over ska music.
Yes. That's the one I'm trying to avoid.
It's sort of like a fedora for your torso.
Yes.
I mean, less so on women, but like, not.
Yeah.
It's not that.
It's also a little bit, never got over Avril Lavigne.
Legit. So. I mean, there is that whole conspiracy that she died and was replaced by an impersonator. The internet is a wild place. Speaking of the internet, before we get into goals and the management thereof, do we want to talk about any of the many latest kerfuffles?
Oh my God.
There's been so many.
So many. People have not been behaving themselves.
Oh boy. Yeah. Oh boy.
Lots of poor choices have
many,
been made.
Many poor choices. I think the big one right now is the American Dirt.
Oh yeah.
Business.
Yeah.
Which, if you're not aware of this, it's a real doozy.
I mean, it's the same scandal that we've seen over and over again.
Yeah, it's
because people don't learn.
Really, truly don't learn. And basically, a book was bought for a lot of money, for a lot of acclaim. It's going to be made into a movie. It's now an Oprah's Book Club pick.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of conversations around the author and sort of who is allowed, quote unquote, allowed to write what.
Yeah, and how it's always better if you're more likely to be allowed to if you do it well.
Yeah.
And so that was, I think, half of the critique was like, this is just bad. In addition to not being your story, you didn't do a good job with it. Granted, I haven't read the book, so I can't.
I read the excerpt on the preview on Amazon. But I think that the thing that really is kind of sticking in people's craw is the many and varied tone-deaf marketing done for the book. Like, the barbed wire. Because it's a book about, like, immigration and this family fleeing cartel violence in Mexico. And they had floral centerpieces.
Well, it's very clearly... like, as the book cover is barbed wire and flowers. And, like, that works as imagery for a book cover, but it doesn't mean you should...
Have it be your BEA party centerpiece?
Yes.
I was like, I've seen that shit at some, like, terrible Pinterest weddings.
Yes.
On, like, farms and shit. And it was tacky then, and it's tacky now. Actually, tackier, I would say.
Yes. At least at the farms, it's referring to animals being
caged.
Yeah,
like theoretically, there's, like, a cow nearby
around.
That you know, it's a note. The wedding is being held in a barn. Whatever. Yes. But I think the thing that really broke my brain was the manicure.
Yeah.
Where someone got the book cover tattooed on their nails. Not tattooed, painted on their nails. And I was just like, guys.
There are a lot of covers where that is a really adorable idea. This was not a great one to do that with.
Yeah, just do the color scheme.
Yeah.
If you're that dedicated, if you're that horny for book manicures, don't do it. But so that was the big one. I did enjoy the BuzzFeed article with all the funny tweets about it.
I didn't see that one.
It was pretty great. Well, we can link it in the liner notes, but the My Latino novel.
Oh.
We ran through the night, or as my mama calls it, La Noche. Everyone's like, oh yeah,
that's how it goes. Yeah, and she keeps talking about her husband, who was an undocumented immigrant before they got married, from Ireland, which is
different scenario.
Like, you as a white lady who was married to an formerly undocumented Irish immigrant could write a fabulous novel about immigration and the history of the Irish in America using that story, and like you could write a juxtaposing what it is to be undocumented and Irish in New York City in 2019 versus mm-hmm. an Irish immigrant in New York City in the late 1800s.
Yeah.
And you could write something truly wonderful from that, and you also wouldn't be co-opting other people's stories.
Yeah, and pain and very real current suffering. Yeah. I think that's the thing that really struck me. There was a publisher's lunch, I guess, recap of her panel at ABA, and she talked a lot about how much she struggled with, you know, should I write this book? You know, am I the person to tell the story? You know, those kinds of questions. And it seems to me that those are like...
The answer was yes. So.
And those are also the wrong questions to ask, because I think that there's so much richness in her own story.
Yeah.
Or the story that she had with her husband or whatever, that like interrogating that a little bit better. It's like, why, you know, why do I feel... Although as I pointed out at lunch today... That it's like, you know, your parents, you know, use guilt as a weapon because it's a way of getting you to internalize that there's some things you shouldn't do.
Oh, yeah.
And so if you're feeling guilty about something, it probably means that you shouldn't have done the thing.
Yes.
Or you shouldn't do the thing if you haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, why wasn't she asking herself those, like, why, if she's acknowledging her own privilege in this situation, she's not, like, that's a much richer vein, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
Anyway. They paid her a bajillion dollars for it.
And it's going to be a huge hit because...
And she's also identifying as Latina, Latinx now, because her grandmother is Puerto Rican, which is legit. But
yeah.
It's one of those things, like, you can't... It's not like a robe you can put on and off. Like, it's not like a cool jacket that you can, like, trot out for like cool points.
And it's gonna be a huge hit because 90% of the book buying public has no idea what is happening on Twitter at any given time, and they're gonna miss this entirely.
Yay. and we entirely missed the 2 weeks where RWA set itself on fire. There's been
That was truly setting itself on fire and running about and screaming, look at me, look at me.
And then trying to put out the fire by putting more fire onto the fire.
Fighting fire with fire on themselves.
But like not in the cool way that like forest service people do it.
Yeah, not in the actual useful way.
But what if gasoline near the flame? I think the part where I was, so if you have been blessedly sane and off the internet and were not aware of this, the RWA went like full kangaroo court and like kicked Courtney Milan out for being mean, I guess.
Yeah.
Sure. And then.
On like Christmas Eve.
It was like, Merry Christmas. We hate you. Like, it was literally like they mailed a box of poo to her house. Yes. And it's like, listen, guys, Courtney Milan does not have anything better to do than like just fucking destroy people.
Yeah.
Because she does not suffer fools. So
it's like, oh, and you thought you could bury this by sending it out on Christmas Eve? No.
That just means that everyone has a lot of free time when they're avoiding their families to look at their phones and it's like, see what you did.
Hanging out in the bathroom for 20 minutes saying, well, in the middle of this party and...
Although, complete sidebar, I saw an ad for that new Apple TV show with Chris Evans defending Jacob or whatever, which, I mean, I don't know what it is, but it looks real dumb. But the kid from Knives Out is in it. And every time I see that little face, I just think of Daniel Craig's terrible southern accent going, the Nazi child masturbating in the bathroom. The greatest line ever spoken by the human mouth. And I'm just like, I'm sorry, kid. That's your career now. That's your legacy. You're the Nazi child masturbating in the bathroom.
You will never get past that.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm going to find a way to work Knives Out into every comp that I do for the next like 10 years. It's my totally favorite movie of the last decade. But yeah, they, oh my God, where were we? RWA.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it just kept getting worse. It just kept getting uglier. It kept getting more confusing. Like, at one point, the president of the RWA, like, resigned because people had pointed out that he wasn't actually
technical. Oh, yeah, he had a fake book.
He wasn't technically eligible. Like, one of the books that he had put up is, like, his... This is... Because you have to have published so many in however length of time. One of them was, like, one of Dream Spinner's April Fool's books that they publish. And Dream Spinner hasn't paid authors for, like, a year. Yeah. So
it's like, and then it turns out that they are, that he is somehow affiliated with them and therefore not, maybe just published by them.
Well, he's definitely published by them. But I mean, it was the same with a lot of people where like a lot. So some people got paid and the people who got paid were usually their bigger authors, but not all of them. Only the ones who said nice things about them. If you said bad things about them, you didn't get paid, even if you were a huge author. So yeah, everything is a mess and it's terrible. So it's great to look down the barrel of a 2020 that is promising to be 40,000 years long.
Oh my God.
And think about the future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where are you at, Bridget? Yep.
You know, also kind of, first of all, I wish the election were over already.
Oh my God.
Cannot stand.
I wish the impeachment were over. I want the election to be over.
Another 10 months of this. And it's only going to get worse.
Did you have to listen to your parents say, like, Pete Buttigieg has some really good points?
A little bit.
Ugh.
My dad is, like, refusing to get involved.
Wise.
Yeah. Yeah, my mom thinks Elizabeth Warren would be a really fantastic president, but that she wouldn't be elected.
God, if I ever hear that fucking phrase again. My parents said the same thing.
Yeah.
I'm just like, well, cowards.
Like, I don't believe any of, like, I don't feel confident that any of them will get elected, so I'm going to go with the one that I think is going to be the best president.
Yeah. Ugh. Anyway. Enough politics.
Anyway, yes, moving right along. Yeah, I mean, otherwise my year is off to a pretty good start. The reason we broke out the champagne today
instead of our normal $13 bottle of wine.
Yes. Not only because I had it already in my fridge, but because I just closed my first deal of 2020. So,
yes.
It is extremely satisfying to finally sell a book that you've been trying to sell for a long time and then editors kept telling you, I love it, but I don't know how to sell it. And then to sell it to someone who very clearly knows how they're going to sell it.
Yes.
So I'm very excited to share this news and then this book with everyone.
Oh my God. I'm so excited. Ugh. I remember when you first told me about this book and I was like, yes.
So good.
Yes.
So I'm very excited about that.
So excited. I'm so scared. Yes. I'm so excited. It's also weird to think that, like, we've only really been back at work for, like, 2 weeks.
Oh, I had the week of Christmas off, and then I've been back in the office ever since.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even get New Year's Eve off. I got New Year's Day off.
Boo!
But I was in the office until 6 p.m. on New Year's Eve.
Boo! Boo! We got a lot of time, which was nice.
That's nice.
And what I really did at the start of the year, which I highly recommend anyone, if you haven't done it yet, I consider January a starter month, so, you know.
Yep.
February is your time. I cleaned my apartment from like top to bottom.
Ooh,
over the course of like 4 days.
Oh my God.
I took all the stuff off my shelves. I dusted the shelves, which I don't think I had done in an unspeakable amount of time.
Don't like thinking about that.
I did like all the laundry.
Oh,
nice. I vacuumed my rug.
Oh God.
It was delightful. Yeah. It was like nice to start the year like feeling like, I don't live in a hovel.
Clean. Yes. Wonderful. My mom gave both me and my sister and my sister's boyfriend for Christmas new sets of sheets and new sets of towels because she was like, no one ever buys these for themselves.
That is, like, this amazing. Is amazing. Except my sister does buy them for herself. Mm. And I'm always like, the ones we had were fine.
Yep.
Like, yep. They were nice. They were the nice Target ones. They weren't even the cheap Target ones. They were the nice ones. We don't need to buy new towels.
Well, this like perfectly describes the level of fancy that my family is that we got monogram towels for Christmas that my mother purchased at Costco and had her friend, her like childhood friend who runs sort of a monogramming business out of her house monogram.
That's awesome. I mean, like, that's fucking
perfect.
Dope.
This is perfect.
Costco has some nice stuff.
They're such nice towels.
They're so nice.
So happy with them. Like, it's so fluffy.
There's a Costco
soft.
In Industry City, and I'm seriously considering getting a membership.
They
also just opened a Wegmans near me. And, like, I know that everyone else on the fucking planet has discovered that Wegmans is a thing and is really nice, but I'm just like, oh my God, it's just so nice here. Because when I was home, my mom is one of those people who grocery shops, like, every day.
Oh, wow.
Like, she doesn't like to sort of plan ahead, so okay. She'll sort of like take the tenor of the room and like see what people want and then go if there's like something specific she needs. So she probably goes like once every other day.
Okay.
And there's a gigantic HEB right near us, and it's a Texas grocery store, so it's the size of a football field. And they have every fucking carving station in the planet, and
oh,
it's
my God.
Huge. And I was like, every time you're going to the grocery store, I am coming with you. I am just wandering the aisle. It's nice to be in a grocery store where I feel like the shelves aren't going to collapse in on me at any fucking moment.
Where you're not trying to dodge other people in the aisles because they're actually wide enough for two carts to pass each other.
Oh, you bring a cart into the grocery store?
Oh, I do not here.
Well, at Wegmans I do because it's huge. And even then, it's like not huge, but it's got a bar upstairs.
Oh my God.
I went up to use the bathroom. I was like, there is
what?
A drinking establishment here? This is a grocery store. You can buy sushi down there in like little cartons. Like, I don't know why that was the
bring
thing
that up and have it while you drink at the bar.
You can. I saw people doing that. Actually, yeah. I didn't see people drinking because it was 8 in the morning.
But, oh, yeah. That's a lot.
But people were eating sushi up there, and I was like, you know, you
that's
need some yellowtail.
A weird 8 a.m. choice, but
you know,
I'm not going to judge.
This is America. You can do what you like. But, so yeah, so I guess this is where we start talking about sort of goals yeah. and resolutions for the year.
So have you set your goals for 2020?
Sort of.
Yeah.
This year, I mean, I have the sort of like sales goal that I set with the finance team at the agency back in like December, which was an incredibly like gratifying but also terrifying conversation. I was just like, oh wow,
oh, we're aiming high, okay.
Oh, okay. Oh, glad y'all believe in me. I've been here for 10 minutes. Nice to meet you. I literally had never met this woman before except over like email and like Skype. I was like, oh God. So I have those goals, but like, I don't know, I feel like I almost have like qualities I want to cultivate in myself rather than like goals. I also yes. want to lose like 40 pounds, but that's like neither here nor there. But like I have these qualities and I'm like, well, how do I do that? How do I make myself more consistent?
Yeah.
How do I do that other yeah. than just like keep doing the thing?
I know.
And there's not like a sexy way to track that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's partly one of the things I'm trying to do this year, which is like my permanent goal. But to keep more on top of submissions, I'm like really trying to make myself be accountable there. So since I spent like 2-3 months not really reading anything, it's truly a pit of shame. But I'm trying to be gentle with myself about that because so much of it was health related. And I am actually reading and enjoying things again. So
isn't that wild?
I know. It's so nice. Like, oh, look, I actually liked this book I read. Great. Wonderful.
I've read 7 books this month.
Oh, my
I'm
God.
Like, who am I, a wizard?
Wow.
And some of them were new books, even.
Ooh. Well, that's always
I was telling thing. Someone, like, earlier this week that, like, for the back half of 2019, I basically only read fan fiction, things I'd read before, and self-help. Because it was a tire fire of a year. Oh, my computer went to sleep. We had a fun moment where we thought, oh no, do we have to build everything from scratch because it's been so long and I got a new computer and we don't remember how to do anything.
Don't know how anything
But so
works.
Far it seems to be working. Not yeah. quite.
Yeah. So I have spent a lot of January so far trying to dig out from, I've like have really buckled down on my old queries that I've been holding on to because I liked them, but like wasn't immediately flinging myself off a cliff to read. Mm-hmm. And so I had to sort through those and decide which of these do I still want to read and which of them am I kind of like, oh, this is, I don't yeah. really want to read this. And trying to really get through my submissions. And so I'm like really, and my client manuscripts, my amazing clients have been so incredibly patient with my inability to read anything. And I owe them all a huge debt of gratitude. I'm so grateful that they have been willing to sit with me while I was like, I'm so sorry. I swear I can't read this right now. I'll hate it and it'll be unjust.
I'll hate it for no reason. I'll hate it for reasons that have nothing to do with the book.
Yes, I'll hate it and I will have absolutely no actual useful feedback for you. Yeah. I'm sorry. So I'm really grateful that they have been able to, willing to wait. And as I've started to actually get back to people there, I think that they are actually appreciative of the fact that I can now give them reasonable feedback.
Yeah.
So, yes. And so I'm like trying very hard to dig myself out of this giant pit of shame.
Yeah. I have not even looked at my pit of shame yet in any substantive way this year. For me, I think the thing that I want to do most this year is develop a better response time, because I think one of my problems is that I want to have the right answer for someone to give them. And so when people ask me a question, sometimes I delay answering so I can get the information.
Okay.
But really what people want is to know that they're being heard and that they're being paid attention to.
Yes.
So I need to just learn to send the quick email, like I'm checking on this, you know, back to you soon.
Yeah.
So that and like editing more, like I feel like I treat editing like a sprint, not a marathon.
Okay.
Like, I'll edit this today. Like all of it in one day. I'm like, what if you did like a couple of chapters a day and then you would be done by the end of the week and it would be reasonable and not put it off until the end of time and then edit it because you told the client it would be ready, and giving you like a real insight into my mind these days. But I mean, it seems to be working out so far, but I think it could work better. And you know, I don't know. I feel like maybe you feel this way too, but like I feel like I'm now at a career where like the things that got me here will not get me to the next level.
Yes.
Like I've done great so far, but if I want to
take the next step.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's one of the things is one of my goals for this year is to like take the next step. But that's also something that is a little bit out of my control.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, what we always say when we're advising writers is when you are setting goals for yourself, it has to be things that are in your control.
Exactly. Yeah.
You can't say, I'm going to get an agent this year. You can say, I am going to finish my novel this year and I'm going to send it to 50 agents.
Yeah.
Or I am going to send out a short story submission every month.
Yeah.
Those are the things you can control. You can't control how other people respond to it. And so I am trying to figure out what I need to do in order to have enough editors who want to buy my things that I can actually make it to the next level.
Yeah.
And that's kind of hard to figure out.
Yeah, because it also, I mean, the same things that we say all the time, like it depends. Like it depends on the project. It depends on the genre. Like the stuff that you need to know to sell something in literary fiction is different than what you need to know to sell something in genre fiction, because it's just two separate worlds almost.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's hard to know, especially because you don't know what the finish line looks like.
Yes.
Because it's always moving.
Yeah.
Damn it. So it's like, okay, well, I trained this way for this marathon, but like this marathon is going to be in like a different climb. Yes. Like how will I...
It's like, oh, this one's going to be hot and hilly. The last one was cold and flat. Okay, great. How are we going to do this?
Well, and at a certain point, like, I don't know if you feel this, but like at a certain point, I realize that I'm not a newbie anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just sort of like rest on like,
yeah,
I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I've been here for 10 years. Like, I know what I'm doing at this
Yes.
point. Like, and as such, you have to do things like a little differently to, you know, keep things going. So,
yeah. Yeah, and I think part of that is that I do really need to like improve my submission time.
Yeah,
I really need to stop. I feel like I need to be a little bit more ruthless about the things, because I read a lot of things where I'm like, I can see this being a good book. I can absolutely see this book being published.
Yeah.
But the question I keep reminding myself that I need to answer is, do I want to work on this book? Do I want to read this book half a dozen times? Do I potentially want to spend a year and a half with this book on submission?
Yeah.
And the answer to, is this book publishable and do I want to represent this book, are not always the same. And I need to remember the second one.
With a little bit of work, could this be publishable? Yes. Do I want to be the one to do the work? No. I also just like someday really want an assistant. It's like, that would be so nice. As I was like confirming lunch today, I was like, someone else could be doing this for me.
And then just tell me, remember, you need to leave in half an hour.
Exactly.
To your lunch.
Here's my list of places I like near Macmillan. Pick one. So, I mean, I guess my like sort of concrete goals of like, you know, not the get an agent variety are get my response time on edits down to 3 weeks or less. That would be dope. Get my response time on submissions down to a month, and I guess just keep on top of my email inbox so that at the end of the week, there isn't anything that I don't...
Hanging over your head for
yeah,
Monday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I my response time on first round queries is actually I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've responded to everything that I know the answer to from December. And it's, you know, January 22nd. And I'm like I'm okay with that. That's
yeah.
Within a month, that's perfect. And of course, then there are a certain number that I've set aside to look at again, and I can't request all of those. It's like 40 or something. And I'm like, I can't read all of those manuscripts. I need to go in and weed through what do I actually want to read and what am I imagining that I might want to read.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, those are the ones that I'm kind of embarrassed about. My manuscripts are also kind of embarrassing, but I can see like I'm getting through those at a reasonable clip now. I managed to read a bunch over Christmas.
Nice.
So I've came back.
I read a bunch, but nothing that was like helpful.
It helped that I wound up not really clicking with any of them.
Yeah.
So I was reading 50 pages and saying, this might be good for someone else. This writer might be good, might have something in the future that I'd be interested in. But yeah. Right now, this book is not it for me.
Well, and in the same way that, you know, an author who's feeling guilty about writing something outside of their own experience that feels yes. that they marginalized an oppressed group should pay attention to that guilt. I should pay attention to the guilt of I feel bad that this person has had to wait is not a reason to request something.
Yes.
Because I do that a lot.
Yes.
And it's bad.
And then you're just kicking the can down the road.
Yes.
It's like and then like 3 months,
2020
4 months, 5
is
months
a
later.
Year of picking up the can.
Yes.
That's what I've made myself a motto for 2020. Don't kick the can.
Okay.
Pick the can up.
Did you ever play kick the can as a kid?
What am I from the fucking like Dust Bowl? Like no.
I
mean,
I did. This was a game that my parents taught us.
Oh my god. I literally thought the kick the can was like something that like
oh, it
people
was,
in fucking Steinbeck novels did. Like, oh, was me and Ma only had a little can to play with, so we just kicked it down the road, and then we'd kick it back.
Well, no, kick the can is like a combination of hide and seek and tag. And it's
this
actually
not even a not little exist. Bit of what I thought
okay.
that would be. I thought it was like, I thought you were going to say it's a combination of like two-touch soccer and like fucking
no.
American Gladiator.
No.
You kick a can at someone's head.
No. Yeah. Well, this game was alive and well in Connecticut in the 60s. And my parents and my mom and her siblings all taught it to their kids. And so, yeah, it's basically you have like, and then, you know, we shared it with the people we knew. You have one person who's it and everyone else runs and hides. And as then like the person who's it tries to find them and then like runs back and steps on the can and calls out who the name and where they are. And then they're in jail. And someone else can free everyone in jail if they run up and kick the can before the person who's it can get back to it. And then it sort of starts all over again. And so this is a really fun...
A cycle of oppression and liberation. I like it.
It's a really fun game to play with a lot of people in like a wide-ranging environment, which is exactly why my mom and her 6 siblings and all of the other families on the street who had like 5+ children, this was an amazing game for them to
play. I bet.
So, yeah, not we're going to stop kicking the can, except to let other people out of jail.
Exactly. No prisons. Yes. No cops, no prisons. And I guess, you know, to set goals for this podcast, I think we just need to aim a little lower and just try to get our one episode a month out. We had all these grand plans, guys, of like, we were going to do a Patreon, we were going to do like 2 a month, we were going to have like special guest episodes. It's going to be great. I think we eventually will try and do that, but...
Yeah. We did pretty well last
we
year
did, yeah.
for most of the year.
Until about like October,
yeah,
I would say.
Yeah.
And then everything kind of like...
Yeah, because we had plans to do something at World Fantasy and then we decided not to, and I think we just didn't record after World Fantasy.
We didn't, no. We did. So, I think that
maybe
episode
one.
69 that we have not posted was from November.
Oh, okay.
Like so, before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. And I do think it's totally reasonable for us to take the entire month of December off.
Yes. And in the future,
too
we
much
might
going on.
We
just
might
plan that.
Revisit that.
I think what we need to do is just plan out the months when we're going to take a hiatus.
Yeah. I'm not fucking going anywhere this year. I was looking at all the cons I'd been invited to, and I was like, I want to, but I'm so fucking tired. I am going to Vegas in May, though. A friend of mine is going to the, like, licensing expo.
Mm.
So, and she was like, I never get to do anything, like, in Vegas. And I was like, well, I don't want to like do, I'm doing air quotes. I don't want to do stuff in Vegas. I want to sit by a pool in the sunshine and I want to read.
Yes.
And I want someone to bring me like drinks every like hour.
That sounds amazing.
From like 3 p.m. onward.
Yeah.
I feel that's reasonable.
Perfect.
For like a weekend. Doesn't that sound great?
That's amazing.
So we're going to do that. And that's like the only thing I have planned. I'm so excited.
I have been invited to a couple of conferences for next year, but none of them pay. And so I
Scourge.
I've reached a point in my career where the opportunity cost of the time, the weekend away, and the amount of reading I'll have to do afterwards is not worth it to me.
I think earlier in my career, I was more willing to do stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
But now, but you know, it's sort of the cost of getting established. It's like, I don't get out of bed for more than, you know.
I don't get out of bed for less than $50.
Although Bridget and I had this truly, truly bonkers exchange with a conference organizer who shall remain nameless.
I think listens to this, so maybe we shouldn't discuss it on the podcast.
Oh, I think we're fine. I mean, we're not going to tell them.
Anyway.
Oh, okay. I was just going to tell the anecdote that we countered. You know, they invite. It was a very nice invitation. It would have been great. But
it would have been fun to, you know, professionally record this in front of in like a room full of conference attendees.
Yeah,
like,
it would have been really cool. And we sort of countered, and they were like, "It's not in the budget." And then they said, "You're the only people who have countered." And we're like, "Oh my god!"
Attempted to negotiate.
It's literally our job. The fuck. They were very nice about it. It was just like, "Oh my god, people, you can ask for more."
Yeah, but, that's never assume an opening offer is the best offer.
Because the thing is like, you will almost never get yelled at for asking.
No.
Just they'll, be nice about it.
Yeah. They'll either say yes, or they'll say, "I'm sorry, we can't do that. Here's what we can do."
And if they say like, "How dare you?"
then
you're like, nothing. "Well, great. Awesome.
Wonderful.
Bullet dodge.
Don't have to think about you anymore."
So do you have any like non-work goals or things you want to do this year, like fun things you're looking forward to?
Not really. Yeah, honestly, it's been, since I'm still like not fully well, I'm reluctant to make any sort of plans or like, I'm not really doing things.
Yeah.
I am feeling better, but I'm not feeling 100%. And so I'm like, oh, I can actually think again, like read and do things. And that's amazing. But also I can't guarantee that like I could go away for a weekend and not feel like dying.
We should totally try and see the Ruth Negga Hamlet at St. Anne's Warehouse in February.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
And, Six is now on Broadway, and I want to see that. I hear that is amazing.
Oh, yeah. The musical about the Six Lives of Henry VIII. Yes. Hell yes. It's going to be dope. We're going to do it. All right.
Yes. Theater. Can do theater.
Theater.
Movies.
I was going to say, like, it's small things. It doesn't have to be, like, I'm going to run a marathon.
Evening.
It could be,
something
cool and dope that
you
want to do.
Yeah. And I am excited because I will, my first year at Jabberwocky, I had very limited vacation days and accrued them very slowly, as one often does in their first year on a job. And so as it is starting in May, I will have a full batch of days that I'm very excited to get to use.
Staycation.
Yes. Yeah, I'll have three coming up between now and May. And so I'm like, I'll plan some long weekends. I don't know what I'm going to use them for yet, but we'll see.
Yeah. If you want to get in on Reading Town in Vegas, just let me know.
Oh, God, maybe. I don't know about Vegas in May, honestly.
Yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a crapshoot. Although the only other time I've been to Vegas, it was August.
Oh, God, so, that's even worse.
Yeah, I mean,
you're just in air conditioning.
You're in
time.
Air conditioning. And, like, I feel like we'll be at the pool in the morning, and then we'll be inside napping at the height of the day, and then go out.
Back
like,
out to the pool for drinks. And...
Yeah, I'm not a complete fool. Well, my one sort of non-work goal for the year is I want to join a hockey team.
Oh,
I want to get strong
now that you've like done your lessons.
Oh, I'm still doing them. I mean, I'm actually not doing them this session because I had a very large credit card bill to pay this month. So I was like, I'll have to take a little snooze on that. And I needed to kind of get back in the flow of work and stuff.
Yeah.
But I'm starting up again next session, and I discovered that the coach that I like the most, Hot Mike, who's the Minnesota dad, he's just so handsome. And it's just like, it's like very distracting. I'm like, you want me to do what with my ankles? I'm sorry, I was listening.
Can you just show me?
Just show me with your body. He's so nice. He's married. He has 3 children. It's fine. He will do like a discounted rate if you want to take a class with another person. So instead of like $100 for a private lesson, it's like $60. So I can do like one of those. And it's like, I feel like I learned something.
Yes. It is like, it is really helpful. So my fiddle, I suppose my goal for the year is I've taken off like 6 months from fiddle. So I want to, I'm not up to committing to a class, like spending $200 and going to a class for 8 weeks. I can't commit to that. But legit. I can practice more in my home. I can maybe go to a weekend session if I feel up to it.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to bring that up. But a couple years ago, I was taking a class. In the last class, we had wound up having one canceled because of snow. And so there was an extra one added onto the end. And for some reason, I was the only person out of like 10 who showed up for that last class. So I basically got a private lesson.
Nice.
Which was kind of amazing. And I felt like I learned a lot. I felt like I learned more from that class than I did the previous 7.
Well, and it's true. I mean, it's sort of the old saw about, like, you know, rich people can get better at things faster because they can pay for more instruction. It's I see.
Right.
But, yes. Like, if you have more disposable income to pay for these classes, it's like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So that's my goal, is to join a hockey team.
Okay.
I was going to say, you should make one of your long weekends to go up to Nora's fucking beautiful ass apartment above her house and just go to one of her sessions that seem to be happening all the time.
Yeah.
That seems like it would be really relaxing.
It does, actually.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah. Well, we're at the 40-minute mark, so let's turn our attention to some questions. This fucking champagne is so good.
Mm.
Thank you.
It is. What is it? The La Victoire Buena Vista? I don't know.
Victory.
Rosé champagne. Delicious. Thank you, Amanda.
It really, it goes down like butter.
It's great.
So you had a question that you held up. Was that a reply to you, or is that...
Oh, no. That was, did we post the episode?
No, we have not, because I'm the worst.
We will.
I think one of the things we're definitely doing is I'm hiring an editor. So keep those donations coming. I have yet to log back into Ko-Fi on my new computer.
We'll have to thank them next time.
We'll thank you next time. We are still seeing the emails. We are very grateful. We are just very uncoordinated. But I think I will be paying an editor, because it takes me a long ass time.
Yeah.
One of the things I forget who I was talking to. It was, I was talking to one of my friends that I'm going on this reading. Is it a reading retreat if it's in Vegas? I don't know. We're also going to go see Magic Mike XXL live. But she was saying that, you know, her life had sort of changed since she got an assistant, because it was like, if there's something that only I can do, then only I can do it.
Yeah.
But if there's something that anyone else can do,
then
fucking have someone else do it. So we're going to start delegating. That's the other thing.
Nice.
All right. So let's go to Tumblr, because I know we've got some questions on there that have been hanging around. Okay. I'm just going to go from the top. So if you have asked a question, feel free to resend it, because we're gremlins. Thank you. Cool Shades and On asks, or says, thank you for the podcast. You're welcome. It's very nice of you to thank us, since we haven't done an episode in 2 months.
Thank you for listening.
I think this is a tired old question, but any advice on carving out time to write? I have to be up at 5:30 a.m. for work, finish at 3:30, then run errands, pick up kids, make dinner, do kid bedtimes, and by 9 p.m. I have nothing left in terms of energy or creativity. I can get a little time on the weekends, but it's hard to get invested in a project that you work on once a week. How do your authors do it?
That's a good question. I think this is the eternal struggle.
Chuck Wendig actually has a really interesting series on, like, how to write a novel in 300 words a day. Because he's like, you know, 500 to 1,000 is often more than most people
can manage.
It's really up to you.
Yeah. It's one thing you can try to do is lunch break. If you get a lunch break, I know some people have had a lot of success by setting aside deliberate time in their day, where it's like, okay, so I have this hour when I haven't really been doing anything. I can use that to write.
Yeah. And I would say also, for me, when I found that one of the things I've been working on this month, with sort of like making sure that I edit like every day, and like, is I've just tried to be much less precious about my process, basically. Mm. I'm like, whatever tools are to hand, use them.
Yeah.
So I actually read a couple of articles. I want to say it was like 2 years ago about someone who wrote a novel entirely like in the Notes app on her phone.
Oh, yeah. This was someone who made a lot of money.
It was like
a
big, it was a big book too. Yeah. But she would be like in the car and, you know, at a stoplight or
dictate to the
phone, or like waiting for
waiting in line at the grocery store.
And she would dictate, and she would, there was two, there was one where she dictated it in the Notes app while she was driving.
Mm.
And then another person who wrote it in the Notes app, like on the subway.
Yeah.
So, I mean, depending on what your commute's like and how much you can stand the sound of your own voice, like, there's also nothing wrong with working on a project only once a week.
Yeah.
Like,
if it's a struggle for you, then that's the thing to deal with. It's not like an inherently bad thing to do.
Yeah.
But
there's also something to be said for, like, if you can get like three, even one uninterrupted hour on a weekend to really bang out like a buttload of words, and then you spend the week editing what you wrote.
Yeah.
Like, maybe that's a way to kind of keep your hand in and keep your mind in the story while still, you know, not... Well, because I feel like also writers think, like, I have to sit down to write. I have to...
Yes.
Writing happens when it happens and when you can...
Yeah. Yeah.
I edited on the phone today when I was, like, waiting for my lunch to start. I felt fancy.
Yes. I can only manage queries on my phone. Those I can handle pretty well, but I haven't managed editing there yet. Yeah, the thing to try to do when you don't have any or don't have very much dedicated time to actually sit down and write is just to keep thinking about it the rest of the time.
Yeah.
Because it's you do need time away from the page for your brain to sort of percolate through like plot holes and how is this going to be most impactful for the character. This is why so many people talk about having revelations in the shower, because there's nothing to do other than shower tasks, and so your brain, like, those are all rote muscle memory basically. And so your brain is completely free to just wander through ideas. And so keep thinking about the story, and have just write down every idea that you have until you get into the habit of having ideas, when you're in the middle of serving your kids dinner.
Mm-hmm. Also, are your kids old enough that they can feed themselves? Do you have, I mean, also this sort of falls into the, and this might not be true for you particularly, question asker, but like, do you have a partner that could like make sure they get fed? Or is there any part of your day that you can delegate to someone else?
Yeah. Even just for like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
To go sit aside and just so you keep your hand in.
Yeah.
So that you don't feel like you're only revisiting this project once a week.
Yeah. But if you can't do that, you know, what are the pockets in the day that, you know, you feel like you could, I mean, there's those little, I used to love buying those little tiny like waiter notepads at like Duane Reade in like 10 packs and just kind of keeping one in my purse all the time. Cause you know, they're like $3 for 10 of them. And you just get a pencil or a pen or something, and like if anything comes to you. I think this sort of goes back to what I kind of originally had conceived of as like the theme for this episode is like, you know, setting reasonable expectations for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like we all are like not only optimists, but also like we're encouraged to be sort of aspirational in the way that we set goals and like the way that we talk about what we want to do.
Aim high, shoot
for the moon. If you miss, you will land among the stars. Like, and then you're lost in space with no oxygen. Oh my God.
And aiming high is a good thing, but also knowing like what you can manage to do every day to sort of get there is you don't have to aim high for every single day in order to be ambitious overall.
That's why I really love, every so often I peek into V.E. Schwab's Instagram stories about her, bullet journal.
Mm.
I mean, bullet journal is like entirely too fancy for me.
Way too much for me.
I abandon it like almost immediately. But I do really like, she sets up these grids and you can make them sort of as fancy or as quick and dirty as you want. I've made mine incredibly quick and dirty. Highly, highly recommend. But she sort of has the things that she wants to track of like, these are the things I'd like to do every day. Mm. Or like, these are the things I'd like to kind of keep note of in my own behavior or in my own activities. And then she has little blocks for like, you know, this is some time that I was able to carve out. Like, this is 30 minutes of writing. Like, this is 20 minutes of writing. And like, divide it into whatever, like something like that where it's like, what is the smallest amount of time you can carve out for yourself? And how can you reward yourself for doing it in a way that makes you happy, that makes you want to continue the habit? Because it's really just sort of for everybody, it's kind of catch as catch can. Because, you know, Victoria Schwab, whose job is only to do writing at this point, still has to make time for writing.
And it's her job is like half writing and half being on tour.
Yeah. Or half like promo or past pages or admin stuff, you know.
Once you start publishing enough books every year, there's so much just like to
infrastructure.
Deal with like, I've got copy edits now, I've got past pages, and so it's like I've now spent, like, this book was finished, written 6 months ago, and yet I'm not done with it yet. I don't talk to my clients too much about how they handle their schedules, because I figure that's their business, and like, I have no right to, like, get in their way, or, like, pry into it. But, you know, they've like, I have one client who is both has a full-time job and is doing an MFA. Got one client, like, one client who's writing a book a year, also going to grad school for science. Yeah. And, like, managed to do all of these things. It's tough. I think the only way to get through it is to think about, like, what is the smallest amount that you can handle, that you can make time for.
Because the other thing too is that these kind of things build on themselves. Like, once you carve out, like, okay, I'm gonna spend 10 minutes of my lunch break writing something on my phone, then you might realize, like, I'm
it's totally manageable.
Standing in a lot of lines instead of, like, scrolling through Facebook or Twitter. I could work on something. You know, Scrivener has an iPhone app.
Oh.
I just learned this randomly. Cool. But yeah, there's, you have to sort of look at your own schedule and your own day and see what you can do for yourself, and then sort of set some reasonable, and then you can always adjust. That's the other thing. It's like everything is, it's iteration. You know, you try version one, then you try version 1.5, then you try version 1.9, and you figure it out until the version that
Something that works for you.
And then for the next book, you might have to throw it all out and start it again. Because also, like, even if you find your perfect process, like, life throws shit at you. You know? Witness the summer of 2019. Let's do one more question, and then I think we might be
running out of time.
Running out of time, because it's just, it's been so long.
I know.
Bridget and I realized we hadn't actually seen each other since before Christmas. So we G-chatted like almost every day, but I think this is also related.
Okay.
How do you deal, Cool Shades Anon asks, how do you deal with burnout in your work as agents? I'm assuming burnout hits everyone. I work in the nonprofit sector and it definitely hits me. And are there certain frustrations or situations which can send you down a burnout rabbit hole? Thanks for your awesome podcast, which I just discovered this week and I'm devouring. The only problem is I thought I'd try to do a dry January and you guys are really making me want a glass of Pinot. Stay strong, my friend. I believe in you.
You can do it.
I don't know. It's tough. I mean, I feel like there's been a lot of people, like, leaving the industry recently specifically because of burnout.
Yeah.
And...
it's when they're like, I don't like this very much anymore, and if I don't like it very much, it's not worth the low pay.
I think that's sort of, because I was talking about this with my mom over Christmas, and was sort of offhandedly joking about burnout, and she's like, well, why do people, I mean, it's just a job, like, keep doing it. I'm like, but I don't think that there's any other, there's not a lot of other jobs where you specifically, like, your excitement is, like, a marketable thing.
Yeah.
Like, that your excitement is a tool that you use to sell something.
Yeah. Even other sales jobs. You don't need to love the thing that you're selling in order to sell it adequately.
And you're sort of encouraged to, like, feign enthusiasm for, like, the washer dryer or whatever. But, like...
But, like, the people need a washer dryer. They're not, like, looking for the one that you're most excited about. Like, they don't need to be excited about their washer dryer.
Exactly.
They need one that's going to work and going to suit their needs.
Yeah.
So it's it really is, like, not quite like any other sales job. Like, my mom's a real estate agent. She doesn't have to want to live in the houses that she sells.
And also, like, I mean, even, like, film people, I feel like it's sort of, like, the trap that publishing has, like, put itself in, where, like, books are, like, passion projects. And,
yeah.
Like, they can be about, like, literary value. It's like, sometimes it's not.
Sometimes it's just about people are going to buy this.
Yeah, exactly. Let's all stop kidding ourselves. And I think that in film, they're able to have those conversations a little bit more openly than we are in publishing. I don't really know how, I mean, I feel like the way that I manage burnout is by, like, just ignoring stuff.
Yeah, that's the problem. It's like, sometimes you just don't respond to anything for a month.
It's like, I see that fire. It's that scene from IT Crowd where he's like, I'll just put this over here with the rest of the fire. And I feel like every agent does this.
Yeah.
But this is another thing, like, this year, like, managing that, like, getting... I have started going to bed so early for me.
Nice.
I've been waking up earlier, and I'm like, oh my God, there's so many more hours. And then, who am I? Have I been body snatched? Like, what the fuck?
Oh my God. I was talking to my cousin a couple months ago. And my cousin works in finance. And so he has been, like, when he first started, he was basically leaving for work at like 6 or 7 in the morning and getting home at like midnight, because that's how it works when you're a first or second year. It feels like cruelty. Yeah. And a lot of it was like taking people out. Like he had to take them out to like bars and stuff. And I was like, you have to like be at work at 7 o'clock tomorrow after taking a client to a bar. God, that's horrible.
You can't see the face I'm making, but
no. But so, his schedule still starts. He's still at work really early. And he and his wife have a dog now. And so the dog like needs to go out at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning. And he's like, yeah, it's fine. And I was like, oh God. I was like, yeah, I don't have to be at work until 10. He was like, what do you do with your mornings? And I was like, well, I get out of bed at like 8:30. So I sleep.
Well, things at New Leaf kind of start, like, I think Joe's assistants are there at like 8:30.
Oh, wow.
So, like, the day starts at, like, 9.
Yeah.
So, like, when I open my phone in the morning at, like, 6:45 or 7, which is when I have been waking up.
Oh, my God.
For the last, like, month.
Weird.
I know. I don't know who I am. I was just like, I've never seen the sky this color at this time of day. Like, my sister, I mean, even when we got the dog, like.
Yeah.
You know, Abby would do the first walk, and I would wake up at 9 and be like, all right, I'm ready to do the second one, I guess. Because, fuck it. I work from home, who cares? But
yeah.
It's part of that, like, oh, well, that was how I got to where I am now. But if I want to get to where I'm going, I got to wake up a little bit earlier. But yeah. But yeah, just like getting more sleep, you know, paying attention to like my workload, being a little bit more honest with myself and my clients about like when people can expect things.
Yeah.
And sometimes I fail at it, but I'm trying.
Yeah. I'm trying to be both more on top of, I'm trying to abide more carefully by the timelines I set for people.
Yeah.
At the moment still trying to dig out, but, yeah. So like part of how I deal with burnout, or have dealt with it in the past is by setting times when I'm just not open to queries.
Yeah.
Partly because that allows you to sort of get to zero inbox, and that number in itself can feel so refreshing.
Yeah.
That you feel like you're able to deal with it. Also trying to recharge by reading and watching things that are really good.
Yeah.
And that I really love. And sometimes that's hard to do because you don't know whether or not you're going to love something until you actually read it. And then you're like, ugh, this is another thing that I didn't really like. Am I ruined?
Am I broken? Why is my brain broken? Yeah. That's why I did so much rereading last year. So I was like, I have to remind myself that like there's books I love and that eventually I will be able to pay attention to plot again.
Yes.
It is not this day.
Just mainline a bunch of things with a lot of plot, and there you go.
Well, that's an excellent segue to what are you reading right now?
So I just finished The Last True Poets of the Sea by Julia Drake.
Ooh, yes.
I loved. I loved so much. It's so good. And it's also so much up my alley that I'm kind of mad I didn't get it in my slush. I had no disrespect to Pete Knapp, who was the actual agent on that and whom I like very much. But
you're fine. That's fine.
not mad at all.
So happy for you. That's what I do now when someone gets something that I like. I was like, why did I get that? I'm so happy for you.
But I loved it. I thought it's the kind of YA contemporary that I really love, where it's beautifully written but not overwrought. It's very personal. It deals with a lot of different kinds of relationships for the main character. It's got romance and family stuff and friendship stuff and like self-acceptance themes. And also it's sort of a retelling of Twelfth Night and deals with shipwrecks off the coast of Maine, so I am freaking obsessed with that.
Like, could this be more my brand? No,
it could not. And so I really loved that, and highly recommend it. And I also just started, speaking of ocean themes, The Wave by Susan Casey, which is a nonfiction book about rogue waves and also the surfers who chase them. So I started this last night. There was someone on Twitter who started talking about it. It was Sarah Tabor, who is the person who tweets all the time about agriculture.
Yeah.
She was talking about this book she was reading about Rogue Waves, and I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. And I clicked through, and like four like, or five people were like, is it The Wave by Susan Casey?
You're like, I'm a slut for the ocean. Like, great.
Yeah. I might need to read this. And then it was, the ebook was available through the New York Public Library. So I got it on my iPad instantly and started reading it. And an hour later, I was like, oh, okay, I'm really liking this. Good to know. It's very well written, very engaging, very interesting. And so I'm very excited to continue that.
I might check that out because, I mean, I often love reading stories about sort of like weird subcultures of people who are obsessed with one random thing that is also like incredibly dangerous and might kill them.
Yes. This is what I've read so far. Part of it was like, here is like for a long time, people didn't believe that 100-foot waves coming out of 30-foot seas actually existed because sailors were drunk and talked about these waves in sort of the same breath that they talked about mermaids. So why would you believe that? And then like in the 80s or 90s, oil rigs started getting hit with them and also having sensors. And we were like, oh shit, that's real.
Oh, that's real.
That's
shit.
Real. Okay. And so then it very quickly, it was like, these things exist because we don't know anywhere near as much about the ocean as we think we should.
Did you go down that like simulation of like,
yes, that was amazing.
I didn't get that far down because I was like, this is freaking me the shit out. It was this like webpage where you just kept scrolling and it had
scrolling
like,
to the depths of the ocean.
Creatures that they have at different depths. And I was just like, oh, I have seen thing that can't not be like, that can't be unseen.
See, For a while, I wanted to study marine biology, and so it was very interesting to me. But then we like got to a point where I was like, "Oh, we must be getting near the bottom now." And then I looked over.
There's
the
like 20
scroll
more
bar,
minutes,
and I was like, "I'm only a third of the way down the page. What is?
Oh my god,
what is happening?
Horrifying."
In my defense, we reached the average depth of the ocean very soon after I thought we must be getting to the end, and the rest was just the trenches. Okay, to be fair, that's also getting into the center of the earth. That's
the Mariana Trench.
But yes, this book has very rapidly gone into surfers who were like, okay, so, you know, dealing with these 30-foot waves is sort of fine. And then start getting into like, you can't swim fast. You can't paddle fast enough to catch the 60-foot waves. But what if you attached a surfboard to a jet ski and towed someone onto it and then like let go of the rope and rode the wave? So we're like in that.
Oh,
and the
God.
Quest to be the first person to ride the 100-foot wave. And so it's really interesting in the way that the people that she talks to about this are very interesting people.
Cool. What have you been watching?
I just started watching Justified because it went up on Hulu, and I remember in 2010, one of my college roommates was telling me, you should watch this show Justified, and I just never got around to it.
I just know that Maya Rudolph's character on The Good Place loves Timothy Oliphant.
Oh,
so
yes, he's very handsome.
He is very handsome.
Can't argue at all. And it is a really interesting modern Western. And it's one thing that I'm really enjoying about it is it's sort of halfway between a procedural and like a prestige drama. So there is a case of the week every week, but there's also ongoing plot lines that are not resolved and that intersect with them in interesting ways.
Nice.
So
cool.
What about you? What are you reading / watching?
I'm like belly deep in our annual rewatch of Midsummer Murders that just happens all the time.
Sure.
But also The Witcher.
I haven't watched that yet.
I think it helps that like everyone watched it and sort of like had a bunch of takes on it before I started watching it. So I like knew about the three timelines thing, and I was like, okay. I feel like this is all the information I need. That, and I've read all of the Naomi Novik fan fiction on the subject, which is like definitely not a character that really like comes up a lot in the show. But it's really fun, and also that one song is so fucking catchy that for a solid week, my sister and I were sort of walking around the apartment just going, toss a coin to your witcher, oh valley of plenty, in like this terrible Cher voice. But reading, just this morning at the gym, I finished The Hand on the Wall, which is the third in the truly devious Maureen Johnson nice. Mystery series. Oh god, it was so good. It was so good. I was like really angry about it. I was just like, oh god, how are you so fucking good at this?
I need to read those.
They're really fun and they're pretty quick reads. I mean, yeah. I would say, I think what I like is that the main character is a character that is a kind of character that in other books I have sort of really hard bounced off of, which mm-hmm. is like a very kind of like closed off, anxious, not very communicative person.
Okay.
Where I want to sort of like shake them and be like, use your words. But the inner life that she's developed for this character is so rich that I'm just like, I get why you're not telling that person
okay. yes.
what's going on right yeah. now. Like, God, I just love it so much. My mom, I gave the first one, Truly Devious, to my mom for her birthday. And then she texted me angrily because she was like, how dare you give me a book that is not like done? Like, it's a cliffhanger. How dare you? And I was like, well, the second one. So I gave her the second one for Christmas. And then they very kindly at Catherine Tegan Books sent her a copy for,
oh wow,
like nice. Not for Christmas but like when yeah. when the copies went out she got a copy because nice. I had pre-ordered mine and all that stuff, but
yeah,
she was like, I'm midway through the second one now, I'm so excited. And then I just started on the train over here, A Gentleman in Moscow.
Oh.
Because I'm trying to read the books that I own and have not read.
Yes. Good goal. Good goal.
So far I really like it. I'm only like 100 pages in, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back in several months ago when I accidentally spent $50 at Barnes & Noble because I thought I had a gift card and it was in fact almost empty. I still have no idea what I spent the first batch of that on.
Hopefully it was something good that you really enjoyed.
I hope.
It was the best book you ever read.
It was totally worth it.
Fugue state post brunch. Yeah. I want to read Das Kapital, motherfuckers.
But I have actually read almost all of those because it was Red, White, and Royal Blue, which I finished, The Last True Poets of the Sea, which I finished, and This Is How You Lose the Time War, which I'm working on.
Nice. So, awesome.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, thank you, listeners, for bearing with us for many reasons. We love you. Please send us your questions, comments, concerns, suggestions to shippingandhandlingpodcast@gmail.com. We've got to shorten that somehow. Ship and Handling on Twitter or in our Ask Box on Tumblr. And until next time, happy reading.
Bye. Bye.